There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
In this episode of the Tech John, we talk about Apple's anti-sexting tool and if not notifying parents is the right call. Is Black Twitter the new green book? We know you can get the tea, but is it also keeping us safe out here in these streets? What do you think about a DEI company that uses digital blackface to make diversity, equity, and inclusion videos? Yeah, we thought that too. And is getting paid for your data the new wave? It probably should be, but it's real though, gonna take a minute. We've got all this and more in episode 13 of The Tech John. From Columbus, Ohio, I'm your host, Rob Dunwood.
And coming out of Philly via NYC today, it's your girl, Tech Lifestyle.
And yo, out of Atlanta, this is Terrence Gaines, a.k.a. Brother Tech, a.k.a. Thuggish Ruggish Bone.
Ruggish.
Did any of y'all catch the verses? I never asked.
I caught the fight.
I didn't watch it. I heard it was some nonsense, though.
Yeah. A lot of people foreshadowed there was going to be some drama, specifically with Bone Thugs, specifically with Busy Bone, which has always kind of been the black sheep of the group. So I actually watched it because I went to college in Tennessee in the mid to late 90s. So all we listened to was 3-6 Mafia, right? So I tuned in for that. And I'd say about 20 half hour into the show, they elevated their friskiness. The whole show, they were kind of like jawing at each other. But in the past, it was kind of like, you know, banter, you know, basketball, you know, trash talk. But this was kind of like extra stuff, right? So then about 20 minutes, half hour into the show, they stepped it up. Busy Bone said, hey, you know, blah, blah, blah. Y'all ugly MFing, so-and-so and so-and-so. Then 3-6 Mafia people fired back and said, you know, as you know, do what you do, fellatio, all that good stuff. Right. And then Busy Bone threw a water bottle and then fisticuffs. Then so, which is so funny.
These are not 19-year-old rappers.
Nah.
These dudes is in their mid to late 40s.
Right. Yeah. Not the little young cat. So for whatever reason, I guess they had to feel like they had to, top what Dipset and the Locks did, you know, because they were kind of chippy, but then they took it to the next level, which was so funny, right? So then the Versus actually took down the feed and put up a commercial. And the commercial that they put up was promoting the next boxing match. It's like, oh, great. That's the commercial.
Some violence and promote
right.
some violence. But they getting paid for that violence, so they right. put that on, yeah.
Right. So then after about 20 minutes, the feed came up. They kind of shook hands, played amicable. Let's just get through this. They finished up their songs and then, you know, they parted ways. So it was interesting. The first, I guess, actual altercation in what, a year of doing verses. So, you know, that was the talk of the town. So
really, I mean, the last one, it was a little bit chippy. But they wasn't going to fisticuffs. They was, right. you know, they was just doing
I
what
mean,
they
that's
do.
Hip-hop.
My crew against your crew.
Talk.
But it's like,
it's just like, you know, ain't that much ego in the world gonna make me mess up my bag. I don't understand folk, you know. So, and then like you said, Rob, these is grown-ups, you know, these ain't 18-year-olds just all young and dumb, and you know, they, it's like, come on, man, we ain't ever gonna be able to rise as a people.
So you know, Bone Thugs, they're from here, you know, right where I'm at. So you would see Busy all the time. Just, bro, what are you doing? It's just like, come on now.
Straight wild.
Just straight wild. And it's just like, why are you in the news again? So it was, so I was wondering when I heard about it. You know, both groups, their music is great, but it was just, I've just not been into the verses. I've seen a couple of them. But it's like, they about to go wide it on here for real. they did.
Brian said during the commercial break, the promoter reminded them how much money. I think the promoter probably said, y'all know y'all got this contract. And if you are in breach of it, this is what's going to happen.
You ain't getting paid.
How much money is going to come out of your pocket if you breach this contract. So y'all might want to get back on that stage.
Right. And that they did. They shook hands. It's all did the whole, it's all love. It's all love.
Right.
Let's get to giving y'all what y'all want. It's like, yeah, we pass that.
Please, can I get my check? Can I get my check? That's basically what they were saying.
That's it. Like, knock it off.
Yeah. But before we get into tech, y'all, I just want to remind everyone that we are on Discord and we are recording this live. We have people who are listening live. And the way you're able to do that is to become a patron on our Patreon. And like, we're also on Discord where we talk about stuff. So if you are interested in getting any of the additional benefits of hearing us in the pre-show and the after show, which last week was kind of awesome, you want to check us out at patreon.com/thetechjohn. And we're also on Discord as well. So there's conversations that are popping up on our Discord as well that you get access to if you become a patron of us on patreon.com/thetechjohn. So with that being said, let's go ahead and get into some of this tech news. And our first story, and when I was reading, I was like, okay, you know, let me just tell you what it is. It's, you know, the Apple anti-sexting tool is this a case of privacy versus parenting was the, you know, the name of the article. And I'm thinking, well, yeah, this is all good stuff until it's like, oh, wait a minute. They're not going to notify for like children under 13.
This is what I'm saying.
And, you know, and it's one of those things, you know, you can't really call this one. There's a lot of folks who are saying that that's actually a good thing. You want to protect, you know, the privacy of these minors. I don't know if I want to, you know, if I got a 9-10-year-old is looking at the wrong kind of stuff, even though it may get blocked, I want to know so that there can be a conversation. I'm not expecting them to police themselves.
Exactly. And let me give a little bit of backstory. I picked this story because this is kind of what I do. I talk to parents all the time through my workshop Till Death Do You Tweet about this very thing, and to young people as well about the idea of sexting and the grave consequences that it might have. But in the next iOS update 15.2, the next one that comes out, Apple is going to introduce a feature in the family sharing settings that will notify a minor, if someone is under the age of 18, it will notify them that they either have a nude photo being sent to them in iMessages, or if they're about to send one, it'll ask them, hey, do you really want to send this? Are you sure you want to send this? Kind of, you know, try to get them to think a little bit before they hit that send button. And I mean, for good reason at this point, you know, the numbers are staggering. I'm always shocked, but I was still shocked. There was a study done, 9 to 12-year-olds, 14% have shared sexually explicit material via their smartphone. This is up from 6% last year. In 2020, 21% of 9 to 12-year-olds said this is normal behavior. This is just how they roll. And 36% of the children 9 to 12 who shared sexually explicit content, 36% of those children knew or believed they were sharing it with somebody that was 18 or older. So, you know, now you got the predator factor in there, the pedophile factor in there. And this is what these kids are doing. I want to shake parents sometimes because they want to tend to bury their heads in the sand and not think that this is a, not think that it could be their kid. But this is what these kids are out here doing. This is how they communicate. This is how they tell each other they like each other. Like sending nudes is the same. Do you like me? Check yes or no that we did back in the day. You know, now it's send me a nude. So this is what they're doing, but there are some serious, serious consequences to this. And like you, Rob, I don't know that I'm okay with the idea that, you know, Apple's going to notify them, but not notify the parent. I mean, that kind of, to me, defeats the purpose.
Well, this is a tough one because I have two daughters, one 13-year-old and another one is turning 11 soon. And she's going to want a phone. My 13-year-old has a phone as well. And well, and both of my kids have tablets, so they are active enough to know what's going on via, you know, social media. Specifically, their app of choice is TikTok, of course. I'd like to think that my kids have, you know, sense enough to, you know, take heed to any sort of weird communication, specifically nudes. But again, I'm not them.
Well, now you like to so think I can't, that, but have that's you had what I'm the saying. Conversation?
Yeah, right. Okay. I've had the conversation, okay. And you know, from them, you know, just monitoring their usage, you know, they really don't even have TikTok accounts. They just go to the TikTok on the web and kind of like just browse through. So once at the account thing is where it's like, hold up, you know, let's have a conversation. Let's do all this other stuff. But again, like I said, I like to think, but I'm not them. You know, I have to give my expectations, my requirements, and then I have to hope and pray that they will follow through. But at the same time, I'm with you. I want to see what any sort of weird communications that would come. But I understand that kids, especially 13-year-old, I don't know if Apple wants to jump into that fight as to when are people considered, not necessarily adults, but when do they, at what age do they have that privacy that Apple is now the customer, or not the
The arbiter.
The kid, right. And the kid is the customer of Apple, not me, right? I bought the phone.
The kid is the customer of you if you bought that phone.
Right. But again, Apple, I don't know if Apple wants to wade into that waters of defining.
Making the decision for
exactly. You. So, you know, I get it. I can see it. I may not agree with it because again, I want them notifications. I want something the same way I've got their bank account set up. The same way I've got their in-app purchases set up, anytime they make a move, it flags me and I have to decide whether or not they can spend that money, whether or not they're allowed to download that app. I would want the same type of notification, but I can see Apple saying, I don't know if we want to be in the middle of all this right now. So
do you want to be in the middle of a situation where this to me is, you know, I'd rather be heavy-handed than not because there are very, very serious implications of having this sort of sexually explicit content on the phone of a minor. You know, depending on your state, you could be arrested for being in possession of child pornography, even if the pictures are of you on the phone. You know, kids are killing themselves on a regular basis because this kind of stuff gets out, and it always gets out. FYI, any young people listening right now, I can 110% guarantee you that somebody else is going to see that picture who you didn't intend to. And so with the stakes so high, I don't think we have the luxury of, and I don't want to lead people to believe that I don't think children are entitled to their own privacy, but minors, an 8-year-old isn't. They just not. I'm sorry. Right. They just ain't, in my opinion. So it's like, I think, you know, I would rather err on the side of nobody gets it rather than even one kid get caught up in some mess.
Right. Because some sex trafficking or something.
Know. Yes. Yeah. Because the parent didn't know that these pictures was out there. So.
Right. Sorry, right.
Sorry. Yeah.
No, I get it.
Yeah, I am.
What about you, Rob?
I'm with you, Stephanie. So I understand that there is probably an age range. If they would have left it 13 and above, I wouldn't necessarily. I'm just 100% down with that, but I could understand it.
Right.
But not every parent is keeping a cell phone from the kid until they get to 13, 14 years old. You know, some kids literally have them 7, 8 years old.
Exactly.
I don't want my 7 or 8 year old to have to, you know, be the one to decide whether or not, you know, am I doing this? You know, is this a good thing that I'm doing? This is a bad thing. That's not their decision. That's my decision. You know,
that's
for them.
Right.
That's and my decision. It's like the 8 year old did not buy the phone. The 11 year old didn't buy the phone. I bought that phone for them. I want to know everything's going.
For 8 year old that would get sent a nude, they're going to be terrified. They're not going to know what to do and who to tell, whoever sent that to them, especially if it's a grown-up, probably told them, don't tell your mom or something bad's going to happen to
exactly.
you. They might be extorting them. So the likelihood that they would say something to you, you're thinking you got the kind of kid that'll come to me and tell me, they might be terrified and not know what to do and be paralyzed with fear and inactivity. Now they got this content on their phone. They don't know what to do about it. And you didn't get the notification that it's on there. So you don't even know that this is going on. You know what I mean?
Right.
So
it's just, right.
I don't know. There was a one line in particular, a quote in there. One of the people that had misgivings about Apple notifying parents. They didn't want Apple to notify parents. The quote was, notifying parents also conveys to kids that they're being watched. Ain't that the point of parenting?
Yeah, exactly.
Watching your kids?
I get it.
What is that?
Right. And I think, again, Apple is trying to say, okay, well, this is what you should do, but so we going to leave it up to y'all and let y'all figure that out.
That's basically what they're doing, passing the buck.
I'm right, just wondering, right. I hear a lot of parents, and some of this might be cultural, but you're really trying to be your kids' friends?
Way too much.
I'm not.
Trust.
You know, I don't
talk
want,
to them all the time, and they,
I'm not trying to be my child's enemy, but being their friend is not part of the agreement. I am your parent.
We're not peers.
Exactly.
We're not peers.
So, you know, like I said, I remember I had a buddy in high school who said the wrong thing to his mama about get out of his room. And he had no room for the remainder of his 11th grade year.
Right.
He literally was forced to sleep in the garage while it was cold. Now, this is Ohio. This is Midwest. It gets cold. We got a kerosene heater. You can wake up in the middle of night and fill that thing back up. But yeah, for the remainder of his 11th grade year, he no longer had a room. He's a minister today. I mean, he's a good dude today. He is a good dude today. He learned his lessons. So I'm not saying I'm necessarily willing to go that far, but my 8, 9, 10, 11 year old, if they got the wrong stuff showing up on their phone that I'm paying for, I need to know. I need Apple. You need to holler at me real quick.
I'm a little it's like they almost got there, but this really just stopped short. A couple more things about this. The company is saying they won't have access to the actual messages. They've been training their AI, their artificial intelligence, to recognize these photos. So now there's that layer of complexity to it, because is the AI going to correctly recognize what it needs to recognize in these messages, since there allegedly won't be human moderators to look at the photos before they get flagged? That's number one. The end-to-end encryption will remain in iMessages. So again, they're really just going to be going off of the data sets that they've already trained to recognize the potential nudes in the messages going back and forth. And it won't work with other messaging apps, obviously. So if your kids have WhatsApp or GroupMe or something on their phone, they can still do it anyway, unfortunately. So, you know, as I tell parents all the time, I'm like, you gotta talk to your kids, like, repeatedly, over and it can't just be a one-time thing where when you hand them the phone, you say, don't send new pictures. Like, you gotta continue to have that conversation as they grow up, and do whatever you feel like you need to do. Every kid is different. Some kids don't need you all over their shoulder like that. Some kids do. But you know your child, and it really is up to you to be the parent in this situation.
Right. And that's what I would say. You know, it's really up to the parents. I could see there are a lot of, like you mentioned at the top, Stephanie, there are a lot of non-complacent or complacent parents who depend on the, for whatever reason, depend on the quote unquote, these tech companies and these user license agreements to say, okay, well, you know, if the ball is dropped, then it's y'all fault.
Right.
You know, when ultimately, it is up to the parent. And if this is bothering you as a parent, then your kid, you need to sign in to their phone with your Apple ID. Mm-hmm. So you get all the notifications, and then you have to, and this, I think that kind of forces parents to really have the conversation, because again, like you mentioned, the kid may be feeling that they're being watched and they really don't have any sort of private time, you know. And if that's the case, then you need to have that conversation and you need to lock down those devices, you know, versus.
And maybe they're not ready for a smartphone. You know,
right.
Maybe they have a flip phone.
And that's the ultimate thing. Cause like you mentioned, mm-hmm. Rob, their kids getting phones at 8 years old. My kids had to wait until they turned tweens. Like I got my 11-year-old now begging for a phone, thinking she's going to get one for Christmas. I'm like, I don't know why. No. Why do you have this phone on your Christmas list? You're not getting it until you turn of age. But, you know, I'm only a parent to two kids in this age. You know, I can't control all these other kids. And I think Apple's kind of the same way. It's like,
yeah, it absolves them of any sort of real responsibility around it. They can pay some lip service to the idea that they did something,
right?
You know, but then they don't have to take responsibility for if it in fact blows up in somebody's face. But it's just the world we live in. These are our problems.
The moral to this story is Apple is going to block it. But you still need to have conversations with your kid, because you may not know that they block something. So just talk to your kid. You should talk to your kids regardless of whether Apple's doing this or not. Talk to your children. You'd be amazed at what you find out when you actually have regular conversations with them. So This next story, I'm so glad that this popped into our rundown right before we got into the show. But is Black Twitter the new Green Book?
Yeah, so I put this in the story because a lot of people assume, you know, rightly or wrongly, that Black Twitter is, one, they're questioning, is it a thing? Number one. Number two, what is it useful for? How do you use it? You know, how do you get access? Is there some sort of gatekeepers? Is there some special code? You got to know some.
Before you go too far into the story, why don't you tell folks what Black Twitter is? Because Black Twitter is absolutely a thing, but we may have some listeners who may not know what Black Twitter is.
Well, and it's basically just a subset, a microcosm of Twitter, but it caters to, or not even caters to, there is a community of people who use Twitter a certain way. Mm-hmm. We share cultural conversations, things that are specific to us, whether it be whatever's talking about in the news, whatever's just talking about in life in general. There is a community, there is a language, there is a lingo, there is a community of people who use Twitter a certain way, mm-hmm. i.e. is what we call it, Black Twitter. Again, there's no leaders. There's no org chart. You know, there's none of that. You know,
no president of Black Twitter.
Right, right. But it is a state almost like hip hop. You know it when you see it. Right.
Right. If you know, you know.
Exactly. So, you know, but getting into the story, a lot of people who, whether on the outside or people on the inside, you know, they use it for, you know, you think traditionally it's, you know, people sharing funny memes, or people talking about just general, you know, pop culture references, like things of that nature.
When a reality TV show is on,
right?
For example, there will be a whole lot of chatter around, you know, that.
at the top of the show, I was talking about the Versus thing. That's something absolutely you would play by play conversation.
Exactly.
You know,
it was scrolling so fast, you couldn't even read the comments. It was going so fast when that fight happened.
Right. A study done by this young lady's name is Shamika Klassen. She's a doctoral student at Colorado University Boulder. Conducted a study between April and May of 2020, analyzing over 75,000 tweets and interviewing 18 Black Twitter users. And basically from this study, she compares the findings to serving a similar purpose as the Green Book. Now, for those who don't know, I'd say back in Jim Crow, post-slavery, you know, there was a lot of places that Black people couldn't go. There's things we couldn't do. You had to be, you know, there were some areas, call them sundown towns, mm-hmm. to where you could not be in those certain areas, to where Black folks did not feel safe. So this Green Book was kind of like a map or atlas that let people know, Black folks know, where they could go, where they could lodge, where they could eat, where they can entertain themselves and feel safe. And don't have to worry about, you know, any sort of retribution, any sort of, you know, just a safe space when they traveled throughout the South and, you know, up the East Coast, you know, without feeling, you know, getting in trouble or having any issues. Right. So this study kind of discovered the platform wasn't being used, utilized solely to share memes, but also to request safe suggestions for lodgings, places to eat without being side-eyed, and which professionals to book in which areas. So fast forward the Green Book concept to now on Twitter, specifically Black Twitter, you know, a lot of people are starting to use Twitter, Black Twitter, and say, hey, you know, where can I go to where I can be around people who look and feel and act and talk like me? Now, we're not necessarily, you know, they're not using to say, okay, well, I don't want to get, you know, I don't want to go to where I'm not feel safe. But at the same time, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's happened recently to where when Black people start to congregate, that's where the whole Karen thing came from, mm-hmm. to where people are starting to call the police. They're getting in their business, you know, and I think as a result of some of those things that came up in the past 2 or 3 years, people are starting to use Twitter and say, hey, where can I go to where I can eat and I can have a good time without somebody possibly bothering us, calling the police because they think we don't fit. So instead of fighting all that, you know, they're using Twitter as this new age Green Book. So I just thought that was cool that they're actually, people are using Twitter, specifically Black Twitter, something more than just sharing funny memes.
I would go so far as to say, though, that most social platforms get, well, I won't say most, but I know Facebook also in particular, because they have that specific feature where you can ask for recommendations. So I've seen a lot of people on Facebook too, like asking for a hairdresser. Anybody know a good hairdresser in the area or whatever. So I think that is one of the good things that comes out of these social platforms is that it does allow us to connect as a community and, you know, look out for each other, because it's hard out here for Black folks these days. And, you know, the more we can just give each other a little tidbit of advice to say, you know what, you might want to steer clear of that place, even if it's just on some, they don't make the best food, so don't eat right there. And don't waste right your money. You know what I mean? It may not even need to necessarily be a safety issue, but just a community issue. Like, I'm looking out for my peoples. You know, I love that it can be a vehicle for that.
Mm-hmm. I personally, now this wasn't on Twitter, it was on Facebook. But, you know, I used to travel a lot, and there would be times when I would have to travel with very, very short notice. And, you know, back in the day, Terrence, you might remember when I was wearing my hair skin tight. So I would have to get a cut every week. And if you missed a cut, you would be looking pretty scraggly. So they're depending on what business or what company I was going to. There just may not be the person I can say, hey, where can I go get a cut? You know, a good cut, because you can't just go to like Supercuts all the time. You can't just. You just can't do that. So yeah.
There's certain types of Supercuts none of the times.
Yeah. but that is probably true. But I distinctly remember, it's like, there really is nobody here that I'm working with that I'm going to ask. Let me go to Facebook and say, hey, I'm here. where can I go and get a good cut and give me specific directions on how to get there. And so, yeah, this is a thing. I never thought about it, but yeah, I've actually done this, and it's probably a good thing because, you know, people just feel comfortable sometimes being where they're comfortable. I know if I was getting a Airbnb, I'm going to look up and say, hey, is it commonplace that folks that look like me get, you know, the police called on them for actually existing in the place that you rent? Because that's the thing with Airbnb. You know, it has happened on more than one occasion. It's happened on many occasions to where you literally are just renting a spot and the spot's in the wrong place and neighbors think you're breaking into the place. Right. Because you're actually typing in the number on the code to get the key. So, yeah, this is an interesting way that I've actually done and just never thought about. Oh, yeah, it's kind of like a green book. It actually is.
And just FYI, because I thought I remembered that somebody had actually put out a new version of the green book, like an actual physical version. And Martinique Lewis, who was the creative lead for Nomadness Travel. I remember, I think I still follow that Instagram handle. But she put out the ABC Travel Green Book last year on August 25th. It came out. So there is a green book on sale. But you know, you can always just pop on over to Black Twitter.
So this next story is one that I stuck in, but it's not something that I researched on my own. It was one of our listeners, Ken from Chicago, on Twitter hit me up to this. And the article was about, you know, is this blackface? There is a company, a DEI company called Mersion, and they create videos that use avatars to walk you through different types of scenarios for DEI type things. One of the things that is somewhat problematic is that they're using white actors to portray black people in these videos. And I wanted to get each of y'all's takes on what's going on. Because it's like, when I was like, for real though? This is what we're doing now?
It's, yeah.
You're a DEI company and this is what you're doing?
You know, and you know, they got some brother at the company to say, and I don't think he said that of his own volition, but the argument that they used for why they used white actors to portray black people was that they didn't want black people to continue to have to be re-traumatized by playing these roles over. And I'm like, we re-traumatize every day because we live in America. So I'm not sure how this is going to add to that. But anyway, I don't necessarily buy that. However, if you were legitimately trying to, you know, save some black folks from some trauma, I think you could at least have done some due diligence on script approvals and something like don't be having white folks up in here using N-words and just trying to, you know, mimic African American vernacular English and all that without. I don't know. I don't like it. The whole thing stinks. I'm trying to like figure out what little loophole I can give them to make this okay. But I'm struggling, as you can see. And I don't like anything about it. I really don't.
It's just, how ironic is it that you are a company that's telling other companies, hey, you need to do better with diversity, equity, and inclusion. And you ain't even doing better in diversity, equity, and inclusion. Right. How can you, you know, convince a company that they need to spend more money? They need to reach out to more people. They need to utilize more resources in order to make it a more diverse company. When you yourself aren't doing the research, you haven't hired any more people, you're not spending the extra money. It's like, how does that even work?
Because Mersion, they have DEI issues of their own. The other part of this article was their own employees and contractors say that, yeah, there's a lot of problematic stuff that's going on.
And I mean, they hopped on that 2020.
It was a money grab.
Like everybody else did when George Floyd was murdered. You know, everybody and their mama became a DEI expert because the companies, all of a sudden, every company wanted to be woke and they was throwing bags of money at whoever could help them be the wokest. Mm-hmm. And this company got a bag, you know, and it's just, it's like, okay, y'all didn't even do DEI training before last summer. You know what I mean? So, and now y'all got a $20 million valuation behind some whack ass, virtual reality that y'all doing that, you know, the whole thing just stinks.
So yeah, one of the things that I took away from the article as I was reading through it was that let me just say this first. So black people are not a monolith. We are nothing close to it. There's simply too many of us for that to be the case. So it is very possible that you're going to have even black actors who they have to act a part. They've got to play a part in whatever script that they're working out. So some people are going to say, well, if a black actor can actually play the part, well, couldn't a white actor? And well, in this case, they are. So it's not about whether they can or not. They are doing it. The question is, you know, well, should they? Because one of the things that, you know, regardless of, how you lean on societal norms, you know, how you lean on things that happen in our world when you are a black person, because we are not a monolith. There is a shared experience of, well, you are black and there's just things that happen to you. There's things that, that happen in your world that just don't happen in another world because the other world doesn't have the same level of pigmentation that you have. Absolutely. So because of that, you know, there's just going to be some cultural things. You know, you can actually have a white person who's trying their best to play a role, but unfortunately, they're going to bring some of their own unconscious bias to that role that's going to come through. So
no matter what.
So I'm not going to sit here and say that this is as bad as if you have somebody go put some shoe black on and literally change the color of their skin to go play a role. I'm not saying that, but it's like, come on, you're a DEI company?
Right.
And this is,
and they were also, it wasn't just black folks. They were also using neurotypical folks to play autistic folks, which I don't think was probably the best thing to do either. And it's just like, especially when you have the ability to hire the people you need to hire to do the thing. If you don't want to traumatize your black folks from always having to play the black role, hire some more black people.
Well, here's the thing. Contractors. These aren't even employees. Right. The talent, they're contractors. So if they're contractors,
a rotating pool of different black people and different autistic people to fill these roles and do them the justice that they deserve. Because when you're trying to, I can see if, this is definitely still not another loophole, but if this was just theater, and these were just movies and you're like, it's a virtual movie, it doesn't make a difference, whatever. But you're using these videos to train other human beings.
And that's my point.
Yeah. And so you need to have the most authentic and accurate experience possible. And you're not necessarily going to get that when, like you said, Rob, there's some unconscious bias that's just going to inevitably creep in to somebody who doesn't have that same experience.
That's just like me trying to train somebody on how to use Windows 11. And then, they do a review or something. They ask me a question. I'd be like, well, I don't have a Windows computer. So it's like, well, how do you not have a Windows computer? Right. It's the same thing. It's like, how are you going to train somebody on diversity, equity, and inclusion when you don't have diversity, equity, and inclusion? It just doesn't make sense.
It stinks.
I'll leave with this one point.
But he's going to take that money and run. That's what I see happening.
Yeah, because now you're going to have their customers. It's like, we can't buy these videos anymore. Here's one thing that I was just thinking.
None of the companies they worked with had a comment, but best believe they all going back to their own departments. Like, did y'all know about that? Who was not the fire behind this? Get rid of them.
The comments is in the purchase order. It's like, decline.
Who okayed this?
So, the last thing I'll say on this is that one of the comments was, well, we're trying to spare the feelings. I'm paraphrasing. We're trying to spare the feelings of our black actors. We don't want to have to make them.
They'll be all right.
But aren't you concerned about that white actors that you out there having them trying to act like, what is his name? Right. Ziggy Azalea? It's just like, you going to make them act like this? It's like, come on now. It's like, this is just not a good look. Like I said, it is not as bad as shoe paint, shoe black, but. But come on now, you're a DEI company.
On that line, though.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So our next story. And this is one that actually happened as our show came out last week. I was on, believe it or not, I was on DTNS, and this is one of the show topics. But Twitter has changed one of their policies, one of their safety policies, banning the sharing of photos and videos of, for lack of a better word, non-famous people or non-newsworthy people. So you essentially can, if you are, let's say somebody captures you in a picture, you could go and say, hey, I don't want my picture on Twitter, take it down, and they will facilitate that. And if you have a certain group or a certain person who is continually line stepping this new rule, then those accounts can actually get banned, you know, taken down, or you just can't post anything new until you go take your offending content down off of the platform. So as we're, you know, I'm going through this story and I'm just thinking, it's like, this is a real slippery slope, you know, Twitter, because number one, you know, there's no freedom of speech things here. It's their private platform. If you want to take this stuff down, you can take it down. But you're going to have a whole heck of a lot of folks who are going to be bombarding you with, I don't want this up. I want this down. I don't want this up. I want this down. I don't want this up. I want this down. And literally moments after this new rule goes into a place, you know, there's folks on the far right who absolutely exploited it to the point to where they were taking down real journalists because they were basically getting together and say, let's go after this person. Let's go after this person. Let's go after this person. And
like the
it was
bad Yelp reviews when they flood the
exactly.
Yelp reviews with something.
And I'm wondering to Twitter, because when I started, you know, looking at this story last Tuesday, it's like, half of Twitter is up in arms on this, and they're telling you this is going to happen. This is going to happen. This is going to happen. And then that thing happened. That thing happened. That thing happened. And it's like, Twitter, how did you not know that this was going to be the case? So, you know, to further the story, on Friday last week, Twitter had to come out and basically put out an apology and say that they fixed the issue, or at least they've addressed the issue, and that they're going to, you know, put a, you know, a team in place, a steering committee, where they're going to actually look at the, you know, the, you know, how they intend for this rule to be used going forward. But Twitter, did you not know that as soon as you start saying that, as long as you're not famous, you can have your, you know, your picture taken down, you can have that video of you taken down, that you're going to be bombarded with people who want their stuff off the internet?
All these social platforms are just throwing shit against the wall to see what sticks as it relates to, you know, privacy and all this kind. Like, I mean, this was just one more piece of spaghetti against the wall. It obviously did not stick. And now they gotta dial it back. I don't know what you do at this point. You know, I don't know. Is the internet broken? Maybe that's like a whole topic for another show. Like, is the internet broken? Because I just don't know how you effectively police speech online. I don't know that you can. And they tried, and this is what they got. So
yeah, that's why your boy Jack Dorsey was like, you know what, I'm out.
Right?
Yeah. He's like, deuces.
I'm out of here. Like, I'm tired. Y'all done made my hair gray and my beard gray, and you know, age me 20 years in five, and I'm done. Yes.
Let me just go buy the rest of Bitcoin and change the name of my company from Square to Box and do some other stuff, so I don't have to be the one to answer to this madness that y'all want to implement.
Nonsense.
And yeah. Like I said, you know, when I initially read this story, I'm like, this is not going to go well. This is just not going to go well because you're leaving too many things for Twitter to interpret. Number one, who is newsworthy? Well, that's a decision that Twitter has to make. Who's famous? That's a decision that Twitter has to make. So is this person famous and this person isn't? There's all these things that come into play. And then the fact that there are going to be, and Twitter said, malicious actors who they actively gamed the system to try to, you know, to try to throw a monkey wrench into it. And that's exactly what they did. They were getting legitimate journalists and journalistic institutions, you know, banned or suspended. And this, like I said, the rule changed on Tuesday, and Friday they're apologizing for the rule that they actually changed.
Well, I think about you know, how the other side of this, like, they're on TikTok. I'm pretty sure they're on Twitter too, but I follow them on TikTok. There's a couple people, three people on TikTok in particular. One is Aunt Karen. Another is like Tizzy something. He's this white guy with this beard, and the great Londini. Like, their entire accounts are just putting people on blast for egregious Karen-like behavior. Like, that's all they do is show videos and be like, internet, do your thing. Internet, find them. Internet, break it down. You know what I mean? Like, internet, let's get this person fired. Like, literally, those are their accounts. And I mean, listen, they're doing God's work, in my opinion. But would a rule like this silence them as well?
You know, absolutely, because it did.
Yeah, it
because
did.
Because according to the story, it said these, you know, folks trying to game the system, like Rob said, ended up getting, you know, some journalists' accounts locked because they were doing things like sharing publicly available images of just anti-maskers, mm-hmm. anti-vaccine protesters, and suspected Capital insurrectionists. See? So these capital insurrectionists, these anti-maskers, used this law and said, you know what? I need those pictures taken down, or I need these accounts locked because of this rule. Now, again, you know, you were asking earlier, and then actually Brian put in the chat, you know, what determines who is famous? And I already mentioned that, you know, clearly there is a unwritten rule that, okay, you're an anti-masker, you're a capital insurrectionist, you should not, this law does not apply to you. But when you, like you said, Stephanie, when you have to put law or put rules in to try to define what these are, people are going to find the loopholes. They're going to find the loopholes, and that's what they did. So now, again, like you said, they're, in my opinion, I don't think there's any way you're going to be able to AI adding moderators, hiring this whole group or whatever. There's no way you're going to be able to create this utopia.
Going back in the bottle at all.
Right.
Sorry.
I will say this to you, Twitter. If you stop allowing people who are out there caring to be put on blast on your platform, you're going to lose a whole lot of users because, like you said, I'm all for that. Now, let me say this. I am a fan of redemption. I don't think that what you do today has to define you tomorrow. But if you go say some really, really racist stuff, you don't just get to say that after you get caught, I'm sorry, and then everything goes back to the way that it was. No, it may take you years. Yeah, you know, freedom of speech. I am a proponent. I've been saying this for years. I'm absolutely a proponent of freedom of speech. You can say what you want to say and not have to fear the government coming back after you for it. But here's the thing. You don't get freedom of consequences from said speech. And there's so many freedom of speech warriors who think that, you know, well, Twitter is infringing on my freedom of speech. No, they're not. They're a private company. They can infringe all they want. It's their right, just like it's your right to say what you want. They don't have to have it on their platform. So I'm not going to, you know, fault them for that. But it's like, Twitter, you already had rules in place that address this. I'm not really certain what it is you were trying to
enforce the rules you already had.
What were you trying to do outside of, well, maybe Twitter wants to hire some new people because it's like, you're going to need to put teams of hundreds to go after this effectively with this new rule where everyone, because I could see some things like, you know what? My 11-year-old child was doing some stupid stuff. Somebody caught it on video. I don't want that out there. I can get that.
But when it's a 29, 39, 49, 70 year old person that's all the way grown and they're out there wilding out, it's like, no, you did this in the public view. Let the public view it.
Their privacy is fiction. It does not exist on this internet, on Al Gore's internet. And the sooner people internalize that idea, the better off we will all be.
Yep.
And free speech ain't free.
So in our last big story that we're going to talk about, have to ask the question, is getting paid for your data the new wave?
It needs to be.
Right. So, yeah, the digital ad market, you know, when you think about all of the information you give away willingly on the internet, just every single keystroke, honestly, at this point is a data point. So anytime you're touching the internet at all, you're giving somebody, whether it's Google or Facebook or whoever, you're giving somebody more information about you that has a dollar value attached to it. And the digital ad market right now is a $455.3 billion market. So there's a lot of money tied up in all of the information that we volunteer to these platforms every day. And there are some companies that are trying to do something about it. So Brave Software Incorporated gives users 70% of the revenue from the ads that they view through their browser. It only averages out to about $5 to $10 a month, but it's something. Reclaim Limited, another company, you can get about $10 a month by uploading your data there. Streamlytics, we talked about that. That's what kind of caught my eye when I saw this article, because I was like, oh, we got to shout Angela out again. You can get actually a few hundred bucks a quarter from Streamlytics for linking a bunch of your accounts and uploading your data. Project Liberty is just a new thing trying to flesh out what they're doing. And Foursquare, old school Foursquare that had you checking in everywhere you went, will give you $15 a month to share your location data. So, I mean, there are some companies out there that see the value of this and you know, but is this really where the web is going? What do we think?
It's going to be tough because our fault, we share our data freely. Mm-hmm. It's going to take a complete mind shift of thousands, hundreds of thousands millions, of people to say, millions. Right, millions of people to say, hey, how can I profit off of my data? You know, it's just such a, not foreign, but such a foreign concept to a lot of people. When people understand that, okay, in order for me to use this service for free, I have to share my data, and I'm pretty sure they're going to do something with it. But it would take, like you said, like I mentioned, it would take a complete mindset shift mm-hmm. from people to start sharing a little bit less, which is probably impossible.
Not going to happen
at this point. But if you're looking to disrupt an industry, or you're going to disrupt the market, this would be the one to try to disrupt. Because again, like we mentioned, you know, a couple of shows ago, or maybe even last week, you know, are there even more companies outside of the ones you mentioned, Stephanie, that are actually doing this? I would say no, specifically trying to get people to profit off of their data. I can't think of any. So, you know, if you're looking for a market to disrupt, this would be the one. Now, how do you get people to realize the value of their data enough to where they start to move and act different? That's a whole nother different question.
Well, I think you legislate it. I just want to jump in here, Rob. I saw you ready to talk, but I just want to jump in. In California right now, I didn't get a chance to do too deep a dive, but there is a initiative called the Data Dividend Project that is happening in California, and a couple different acts that they've passed around privacy protection. The California Consumer Privacy Act, and it's in conjunction with another thing. Andrew Yang actually was sort of the impetus for all of this during, I think, his run. But Californians is about to get cut a check.
Okay.
like just off of GP and what that project, what the data dividend project is trying to do. They got that legislation passed in California where you should be compensated for your personal information. And they want to, you know, get similar legislation passed in every state. So they're trying to set up chapters and help people, you know, write their state Congress people and all that stuff to get it done. So, I mean, you know, we may not need to shift our minds at all if we can write a law about it.
Right. That's true.
So yeah, you stole my thunder. I was actually going to go there and see what, you know, talk about what Andrew Yang was running on his platform and what Gavin Newsom is actually doing out there in California. And I think
it's. But expand on it, please. Cause yeah. I, like I said, I only sort of like skimmed it. So
well, no, I absolutely believe it's going to take that to happen because what you are telling people to do is that it's like, we want you to stop using this thing that you really, really, really love. And go use this other thing that has no one on it yet, where you can make money off of your data. But the thing is, you know, some people, well, actually, a lot of people are probably going to go and do that who are thinking about this stuff. But the masses don't. You know, Stephanie, you can probably tell Terrence and I better than we can tell you because this is what you do. But people have to understand what they are putting out there in the, you know, in the internet. And once it's out there, it's out there. And I think for a lot of folks, they just don't understand the amount of data, the psychological profiles that these companies can build on you and determine that they probably are going to turn left at this corner as compared to turning right because of all of these other metrics that we have. I mean, it is that deep on the level of data that people have. And we just freely give it away. So I don't know that people on their own, because you're getting the crack of the, you know, you're getting that taste of, ooh, I like this. I like this, you know, this thing I got on Twitter. Ooh, I like this thing I got on Facebook. Ooh, I love this thing I got on Instagram. I love this thing I got on TikTok. I want more. I want more. I want more. And until you can kind of subdue that and replace it, you know, with, well, we can take this data. We can still give it to you, but you have to take your data out and you need to put it over here and we need to build another, you know, competing platform. I just don't know that people are fickle. I just think, yeah, I hear what you're telling me about my data, but I really like looking at TikTok.
Well, it could just be as simple as a lot of people that's like, well, little old me, you know, why does Facebook or why do these social media sites care about, you know, what I do when I get up? It's just little old me, right? You know, right. I think once people actually see the straight line from this information that I put in here, this is how the company makes money off of it. I think a lot of people just assume, okay, well, you know, they're going to use my data to create a better experience for me. And that's right. The line that they're fed. It's like, mm-hmm. Okay, well, I don't mind giving them my data because they're going to create
my
this
life
better,
easier. And
right. Mm-hmm. Right. Make my life easier. But they don't see I'm putting all this data in there. And this company is literally making X amount of dollars
Facebook
per user.
Facebook made $41.41 quarterly in 2019 off of every U.S. user in the country.
Right. Right. And now if people could do that quick math and say, hey, wait a minute now. Wait. It's one thing to just make a better experience for me. But right. Can I get $2? Can I get a couple dollars of that?
Dollar amount that, and they right. need to keep doing that. There was a great, in research in this, there was a article in Forbes written by the CEO of Kinzu, which is like a monitoring tool for kids and for parents to put on their kids' phone or whatever. But he did the math. And that's where I got that $41 from. And he just broke it all the way down to how much we should get, like, a week or a month based on mm-hmm. the fact that they're harvesting this data. And yeah, to your point, Rob, like we just don't even have a concept, you know, of our digital footprint. So it's mm-hmm. like, you know, if anybody's listening, you know, if you just want to do a little nerd, exercise, like write down everything you do that's connected to the internet, like every, mm-hmm. not just TikTok and everything that mm-hmm. Fitbit. You know, your email, your Google's like
paying bills.
That listen, your bank account, that, you know, that Robinhood account, like everything you do that you do through an app or through your computer or anything electronically connected. Like that list it's going to be long AF. Like, mm-hmm. you're going to be like, oh, snap, I didn't even realize. And those are all data points. Every single one of those things is a data point that we are giving away. But let me ask y'all this real quick. I know we're coming up on time. Is privacy a commodity or a right? So we're talking about paying, but is this something we even should have to be paid for when it should just be a right that we get our privacy anyway?
I think, you know, social media companies have blurred the lines from what's public versus private data. You know, when you sign up for a new service or whatever the case may be, you know, you just assume that, okay, anything that I put into this, whatever it is public because I put it there, right? Now, anything I don't want there, I'm supposed to put in this DM or a private message or just make my whole account private. And then I can just type whatever and the company's not going to do anything with that information, right? So I think a lot of people assume that.
Better read that fine print.
Right. I think a lot of people assume that, okay, well, the public stuff I put out there, I'm okay with that. The private stuff, I either don't say it or I make it private. And that should be good enough to where, you know, going back to your initial question, you know, a lot of people assume that it's, you know, just a commodity, right?
Mm-mm. Yeah. Go ahead, Rob.
I was going to say, it is. You're going to need laws to be put in place to change this because people like Facebook, people like Instagram, people like TikTok. I don't want to give that up for a few dollars because that's essentially what we're saying that you need to do if you're going to go and use these other services. Now, if you use these other services and they do what they do the right way, they could potentially build another type of Facebook. They could build another type of TikTok, but that's going to require sea change. You're going to have to actually have you move from this platform to that platform. And people have just shown, I mean, look at all the stuff that we have talked about. This is episode 13. We talk about Facebook almost every show about, wow, Facebook did this. Wow, Facebook did that. Facebook is growing. They're adding users to their platform. So
would you pay for a private experience?
I would.
The three of us all would, but most people aren't because they were hit with that. I want to give you this. You know, I'm you know, basically, it's just like if you think about how drug dealers work. I'm gonna give you this for free the first time. When you come back, that's when it costs. Once I get you hooked,
we get you on the comeback. That's exactly.
First hit's always free.
And Darren, you know, and Terrence, to your point, all that data that you don't think you're giving, that's the stuff that's the most valuable to these companies. They ain't just trying to let that stuff go unless the government tells them that they have no choice. And they will do whatever PR thing they can do to not look bad, in the moment. But as long as those user numbers are not dwindling, there is no reason for them to change, their business short of we're about to be regulated. Maybe we should change this up. We're about to have this happen. Maybe we should change this up. Ooh, we got to pay the EU however many hundreds of millions of dollars. Maybe we should change that up. It takes those kind of things to make the companies want to do it.
Because Europe is not having none of this.
No. They are not messing around at all.
So they are passing legislation fast and furious to get these folk in line. Some of that trickles over to us because it's just cheaper to fix the whole system. But, you know, we are still really left out here unprotected because our government can't seem to get their act together and don't seem to think that there's a need to. Until we actually get some folk, you know, in the government that actually understand these platforms and the stakes, we just going to be left out here to the hang for ourselves, you know?
So you guys, we're at the end. We're even a little long, but I still need to go through the Tech John spotlight because we got a good one this week. So this week's spotlight is on Dr. Mark E. Dean. And let me go ahead and just read a little few things about what this brother has done. Dr. Mark E. Dean is an inventor and computer engineer who holds 3 of the 9 patents for being the co-creator of the IBM personal computer. Now, that was just one sentence, and I could really stop right there because this dude did a third of the patents on the PCs that we are using today. But I won't stop. I want to keep going. Born and raised in Jefferson City, Tennessee, Dean was gifted both athletically and academically. He headed to IBM, where he would spend more than 30 years after receiving a degree in electrical engineering from the University of Tennessee. In addition to being the co-creator of the IBM PC, he is also touted as creating the ISA bus. Now, for those of you that have been using computers since back in the early 2000s, late 90s, the ISA bus basically is what allowed you to plug things in, like modems, sound cards, video cards, all that kind of stuff, on some of these back in the day type computers. He also laid the groundwork for the color monitor and led the team that created the first gigahertz processor. Amid his work, he also earned a master's degree from Florida Atlantic University and a doctorate from Stanford. Dean was the first African American to become an IBM fellow, the company's highest distinction, and he was also named Black Engineer of the Year in 97 and 2000. Dean was elected to the National Academy of Engineering in 2001, and to date, Dr. Dean has over 20 patents. After several years as a VP at IBM's research division, Dr. Dean rounded out his tenure at the company as CTO of the Middle East and Africa. He left the company in 2013 and now is serving as a John Fisher Distinguished Professor at the University of Tennessee after being their interim dean of UT's Tickle College of Engineering in 2018 and 2019. In a 2015 Engadget Black History Month article, Dean said that he was asked how he dealt with racism. And he said, "I ignored the people attempting to block my progress and had no limits on who I would ask questions to and who I would share my opinion with. I was also able to demonstrate my ideas to the point to where it was hard to argue their viability. It took a lot of work and sacrifice, but I was confident and believed I had some good ideas. Fortunately, there were a few in the right leadership positions that agreed with my ideas." And I'm kind of smiling as I say that, because he was that dude. His stuff was so on point that even the people that, like, why does this bro keep getting all this shine? Because, yeah, he understood the assignment. He right. was that dope with his stuff.
Come so through Black excellence.
Exactly. As for his current work, Dean tells us that he's looking to develop an alternative computing architecture, leveraging what we know about neuroscience and brain structures. Basically, it means rethinking the way we thought about computers so far. The brain tends to be a good process, tends to be good at processing large amounts of unstructured data in real time using very little power. And he's trying to figure out how to do that with computers as efficiently as possibly today. So it's like, we think of this stuff as like ancient history, but this bro's like 63, 64 years old. He is still in the game for another decade doing this stuff. And he's working with brain type computers. Dr. Dean, just please
have us thinking thoughts.
Please don't be Joe Morgan from Terminator 2. Do not create Skynet. Do not create Skynet.
That's what I was going to say. I was going to say, you had me all the way up to the last two sentences. Right. I'm like, this brother
is until Skynet. Yeah, right.
I don't want to be walking around with tinfoil on my hat, tinfoil hat on my head. But no, Dr. Mark E. Dean, like I said, this bruh is actually doing it. And I want to say that I think I saw him speak somewhere around 2004, 2005. Our company was doing something with IBM, and I think I heard him talk. I think this is the guy that I was with. I need to go ask a few people, at my old place of employment to see if that was who, in fact, we actually talked to. But it's like, yeah, I didn't know this. A bruh helped invent the modern computer. When you say the IBM PC, all the stuff we are using is based off of what this guy came up with back in the, the late 70s, early 80s.
And shout out to IBM for recognizing for that, because that is intellectual property, and they could have just been like, get over to the side, Right. We got this. We made this up,
Right.
They shared it with them. As always, there is way more that we could talk about, especially now with him being a professor and all this kind of stuff. He's really into, trying to help folks that look like us get into these technology fields. And it's like, you got to break these barriers down. You got to get in.
Lift as you climb.
He's got some quotes, and he's basically says, like, look, these companies ain't really trying to feel you like that. You got to make them feel you like that. And that's what he was doing. Like I said, the part that I read and I started laughing and I couldn't get through it was, he is getting shine, not because he's just good, but he's so good that they had no choice but to, because when he was coming up, computers in the 70s and the 80s, it still is, but it was a cutthroat business. It's like, you know, folks are trying to figure out how to do this. They were trying to figure out how to do that. And whoever was first was the person who was going to get the shine. He made sure he got his by just being that much better than everybody else, that you could not take, you know, what he was doing away from him. And I kind of think it's like, you know, some of his peers are like, how is he always getting his shine? It's like, yeah, he's that dude. He's that dude. He's just that good.
A conversation for another day. Why do we have to be so good?
I mean, you know the deal. Twice as good to get half as far and all that.
Why? Why does he have to go through all that? Why can't he be regular? America. Regular and do all this cool stuff? Why we got to go above and beyond?
Who wants to be regular?
But that's a conversation for another day.
So I'm not looking at it right now, but we had a lot of folks who were listening to us on the live stream today. I think today was our biggest. Yeah, we had quite a few out there. So once again, if you want to get on our live stream, you can become a patron over at patreon.com/detectjohn. And as we always do at the end of our show, we want to read off our patrons that we've picked up since the last week. Now, the first one, Adam Clark, you actually joined 2 weeks ago, but you joined. We recorded a day early, so I missed you last week just because we recorded a day early. But we've got Adam Clark, Timothy Cahan, and Kim White. So we want to thank you guys for all becoming patrons. And we hope that you can actually come out and listen to us do the live show, because we have a blast doing it. You know, you get a little bit before, you get a lot of it after, and it's always a good time. But we're a little over on time, so I'm going to go right into letting you guys tell the people how they can get to us. So Stephanie, why don't you go ahead and tell them how they can get to you.
You can find me all around the web at Tech Life Steph, and check out my website at tilldeathdotweet.com.
Yo, you can find me everywhere on the internet and on my website if you just go to Brother Tech. And real quick, I just wanted to give a shout out to my wife. Her birthday was yesterday, so happy birthday. And if y'all, you know,
shout out, Mrs. Tech.
Yeah, right.
Sister Tech.
Yeah, right. If y'all could just show her some love, that would be greatly appreciated.
And I am at Rob Dunwood on all the things. And also check us out over at thetechjohn.com and at thetechjohn on Twitter. And until we gather again next week, y'all, peace.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.